Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Mark DeJohnny to the broadcast. Mark is a Senior Vice President and Chief Information and Process Officer of Mondelez International, a $34 billion company formed in 2012 from what used to be referred to as Kraft Foods. In his role as Chief Information and Process Officer, Mark is responsible for the company's business process excellence leadership, the enterprise shared services, as well as the organization's information systems and technology. Prior to his current role, Mark worked at Kraft Foods and Altria, also a former Kraft Food organization. Mark received his Bachelor of Science degree in Electrical Engineering from the University of Texas at Austin and an MBA from Averett University in Virginia. I recently caught up with Mark by phone in his office in the Chicago area, and our conversation covered world-class IT Principle 1, people, as we discussed how he organizes his team to manage process versus technology needs, Principle 2, infrastructure, as we discussed how he ensures that legacy technology doesn't get in the way of innovative activities, Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as we've discussed the way in which he has focused on activities related to innovation, Principle 5, external partnerships, as we discuss the ways in which he has tuned his team to be truly customer-centric, as well as a variety of other topics. This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as strategic facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and several other topics, all told with stories from leading CIOs from a variety of major corporations. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much.
Mark DeJohnny, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Great, Peter. Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled.
It's my pleasure, I assure you. Mark, I thought we'd begin with, although it is certainly a company of great consequence, there may be some listeners who may not be as familiar with Mondelez International. I thought perhaps you might take a moment to describe the business as large as it is, but also relatively new under that brand name still.
Yes, Peter. We're very excited about our company. We formally launched it in 2012 when we spun off the Kraft Foods company. And it's a very exciting company with the collection of brands that we have. Our products are all over the world. We are actually the largest chocolate company in the world. We are number one or number two positions of all the brands that we have, whether it's Oreo, Nabisco, Cadbury, Trident. I mean, it's a phenomenal portfolio that people enjoy every day. I'm very excited to be part of this company. We have over 100,000 employees in almost every nook and cranny, as you can imagine, in the world. So we serve so many people in the world with our delicious products every day. It's very thrilling.
Excellent. And can you talk a bit about your role as Chief Information Officer? How do you organize? What's under your purview, at least in that portion of your responsibilities?
Actually, my role since I've been a CIO has been ebb and flowing. It changes depending on the priorities of the company. And I'm really thrilled about that. You know, I kind of work where I can make the most impact. And my focus really today, beyond just information technology, is really how do we run a better company? So I'm focusing on running process improvement, process excellence, and how do we really create better outcomes for our shareholders? So I spend a lot of my time focusing on really running a better back office and a better front office of the company. So within my title, you know, even though today it says Chief Information and Process Officer, I tend to focus a lot of my time on improving the operations of the company, which is really exciting today, how we can leverage technology to make companies better. So this is currently my focus. Something I just took on recently, really the real estate portion for this company. And people might wonder, why would CIO have a real estate for the company? And I've asked for that because I feel, you know, our job is to provide computing experiences for our employees. But to go beyond that, it's not just about computing experience, it's about work experience. So I'd like to spend a lot of my time also to provide a better work experience for our employees, and real estate and facilities have to be an integrated portion of what we do for our employees. So I'd like to bring real estate and technology together to really help our employees be even more productive. My role is today, and if you ask me a year from now, probably what I'm focusing on ebbs and flows, and this is kind of the thrilling part of working up for Mondelez International. We have a lot of flexibility to really just work on what it takes to get our jobs done.
Well, I'd love to talk about each of those additional responsibilities beyond the traditional CIO role. So you mentioned you're also the chief process officer, and I wonder, on the one hand, there's a lot of logic to that. What role in the corporate structure has more cradle-to-grave insight on process for the entire organization? And yet, of course, there are not a lot of peers of yours, as CIOs at least, who also formally own process in the way that you clearly do. Can you talk a bit about the process, if you will, of taking on those responsibilities, how that occurred to you and or to your colleagues, that ought to be something wrapped into the CIO's bailiwick?
The story for me about it is very interesting, is very clear, Peter. In the last 3-4 years, even beyond that, we deployed a lot of technology for our company. We have SAP end-to-end. We are deploying a lot of sales systems. So we're invested quite a bit of money on automation in our company. While every project, in my view, had its own return on investment, so, you know, the typical ROI, so every project we implemented had a return. But when I sit back, and at the time, our CFO and I were just discussing, you know, how could we really get even a bigger return on our investment from technology? And became clear that it's not just about deploying this technology and getting the initial return, but how do we get this gift of technology to keep giving for a longer period of time, indefinitely? And this is how we incubated the idea that we really need to focus on process excellence, not just focus on technology deployment. As a matter of fact, I would really predict maybe in the future that we as IT leaders, if we don't really focus on improving process, not just deploying technology, then over time, our jobs would diminish, you know, with the cloud and the evolvement of technology and ready available tools, right? So our job really is how do we run a better company, better way to run a better company by making our processes better. So one thing that we're really excited about is we created a framework across the company that IT is leading now with the process teams that work for me, is to how do we rethink our projects, how to rethink our deployment of technology, how to rethink about our daily lives. So we have a methodology now, really. A lot of people, by the way, talk about value realization from projects, and they have a lot of finance people keeping track of this value realization. I think the money is always the most important thing in running a business, but money is always a lagging indicator. What are the leading indicators? Are the process KPIs and the process measures. If you deliver on the process measures and these process KPIs, then you definitely will deliver the return to the company. So the methodology that we are really working with, we call it DIAL. The first two letters of the DIAL is about business transformation, and the second portion of DIAL is about business sustainability. So our projects now begin of what are the outcomes we want to deliver, what are the improvement that we're trying to get done, and then how do we sustain that improvement? And when you start bringing the sustainment early on in the project deployment and the thinking, you create a lot more sustainability of improvement. And I hope that gives you clear thinking about how we think about process excellence and why we believe it's so important to our company. And this is not just about the back office of the company, but it's also a lot to do with growth. I mean, we spend a lot of our time working with salespeople to make their processes better so they can call on more stores, they can help our customers more. There's so much that we can do. And as you know, Peter, as the technology changes so much, we have to really stay on the leading edge of change. So by focusing on the process and change management, that allows us to deploy the technology much seamless.
Very interesting. I like the way you frame that and some of the nuances, the new ways of thinking you're applying to that with such a laser-like focus on it. Can I actually also ask you, the organization under you, do you have two separate teams, one focusing on process versus those who are in a more traditional IT setting? Or are they also like you who operate with a foot in both worlds?
So actually, it's really right now, it's the foot in both worlds. And let me tell you why that's important for now. And I'll describe to you how we work through it. At the end of the day, while I'm the process officer and my job is to help run a better company, there's so many processes in the company that direct accountability for the results of that process lays with the process owners. So if you work in procurement or if you work in HR or supply chain, The people that run supply chain have direct accountability of the performance of the processes. So my role is really to make sure that I frame that discipline across the entire company. We make sure that we have the process owners understand their accountability, the process owners know we work with them to define the KPIs of processes, we work with them to define the benchmark of best in class. So that's one leg of the stool, Peter. It's really the process owners and their daily accountability to run the process. Then the other folks, I have a small group also on my staff that focus on process discipline. So the team, you know, they own the framework that I mentioned to you, the DIAL framework. They own the KPIs. They own the repository of the processes. So that team really works on the strategy of how we're going to improve our processes. And also they build enablers for the process owners to really deliver against it. The third leg of the stool are the IT folks. And think about them, the IT folks are the largest portion of our organization. They are the feet on the ground that work with the process owners by leveraging the framework from the process organization to put them together. So this is the way the triads come together.
Very interesting. Hey, can I ask you, was it your idea? You mentioned taking on real estate was your own idea, something you proposed and obviously was given to you. Likewise, was formally taking over process an idea of yours or one that was suggested to you?
No, it was really mine. I mean, you know how sometimes you incubate ideas that it's not just your idea. You know, my job is to get the light to come on in a lot of people's heads at the same time. So I really hate to think of it as my idea, but it's really at the end of the day, if I'm doing my job right, the light bulb come on in people's heads. And I really like to think of my job a lot of times as an incubator of ideas. And I incubate a lot of different ones, and some of them stick and some of them don't stick. And it's rightfully so, right? Yes. If you want to incubate correctly, some ideas might not flow, and you respect that. That's how I think about it, my work a lot. If you remember, a year ago, I started up some of the shared service centers now. So I incubate ideas over time. I don't want to create more footprint for me in the company. I'd like to stay agile so I can deliver where I can get the biggest return for our company. I think about myself sometimes as a startup internally.
The reason why I ask the question is no doubt there are some people listening to this who would wish to emulate some of what you've done, that is grow their responsibilities and expand the influence of the great work done in IT into other areas that are logical extensions of that. And I think it's meaningful that you didn't wait for the idea to occur to others, but rather as the spark, as the idea, as the light bulb turned on for you, it was something that you brought to others. You didn't wait for the ideas to come to you. So that proactive thinking, that testing a variety of creative ideas seems like a pretty important ingredient to achieving your goals in this case.
Yeah. But Peter, the most important bit, this really is not about me. It's about the organization and the success of the organization. My motives is really my outcomes and my stand is really for the company and for the shareholders. And when you have that stand, things get much easier. You know, it's not about my footprint. It's not about me. It's about making a big impact to our employees, our shareholders.
One of the things that I found fascinating from some of our past conversations, Mark, is the degree to which you believe IT needs to be not only internally focused as it has been traditionally, but even as you've mentioned in this conversation, an external focus as well, more cognizant of customer needs, more cognizant of the digital footprints and how that impacts different customers of various kinds. Can you talk about the process? As I know, there are a lot of peers, at least in your IT set of responsibilities, your peers as CIOs, who still are struggling with that balance. What are some of the ways in which you've tuned your organization to be much more true customer-centric?
Yeah. So, Peter, you know, I think, and as I think about this question, I think my deep-rooted belief about this one is where the company begins and where the company ends is going to change over time. You know, I mean, you look at companies like HP or Apple or new companies don't have the infrastructure that old companies that have been around for a long time have, right? So in my heart and in my mind, I don't have a predefined notion of what a company is classically. And because of that, it gives me the freedom to think, okay, what is my ecosystem that I live in? And once you start believing in that concept and what the ecosystem that you live in, that opens up your heart and mind to a lot of external possibilities that may exist or business models that you can live within. For example, on the IT side, and it's been going on for a long time, we have been leveraging external partners. And I never really use the word outsourcing because outsourcing means taking your stuff and give it to somebody else. It's more managing to an ecosystem, the gray lines of a company. So we've worked with our employees over a long period of time to think of that concept and think about leveraging everything around you. 360 is the most important bit of our jobs. So it's not about trying to control our paradigm, but it's about enabling and empowering ecosystem partners to work with us. And when you embrace that concept, you start building on it, not just trying to manage it, right? And this is really the fine line of building on it versus managing it. This is, to me, the fine line that makes a huge difference. So we worked hard with our employees to embrace these relationships and continue to exploit what's available in the marketplace. That has really opened up a lot for me, because I don't have to convince our employees to think out of the box or think externally or internally, but they think about it, hey, I live in a world that's open. I live in a world that I have to leverage whatever resources available to me. And therefore, we were able to embrace certain things very, very early on. The one is, as I mentioned, leveraging ecosystem of partners. You know, 5 years ago, for example, we were the first one to leverage BPOS and 365. So because of that thinking, we don't really have any data centers, and we don't have a lot of built-up infrastructure internally to us. And I think that's really helped us a lot. And if you continue to build on that model, our network, really, we don't have a dedicated network. We ride the internet as much as we can. So this open thinking allows you the freedom to create and evolve much faster. Some of the things, I tell you, be honest with you, I feel like some of the things I got lucky with, you know, when we started with this notion of what is a company, and we were able to build off of that, and we got lucky in certain things.
I know, sort of along a similar vein in terms of this focus on the customer, one of the things you've been very adamant about is that a CDO, a chief digital officer, is not necessary for all companies. That you know, your organization, Mondelez, does not have one. The set of responsibilities associated with that, at least as it's being defined in some companies, is distributed among a variety of people. But why is that? Can you kind of go through your thought process on how digital responsibilities ought to be leverage within an organization?
Yeah, our internal team in our organization, the IT folks and the IS folks and the process folks, their job is not just to build technology, but their job is to evolve a corporation. So if you believe in that concept, then our job is really to provide the necessary leadership internally to help the company evolve. Today it's digital. A couple years ago, it was something else. You know, 5-6 years back, we worked about the digital supply chain. So digital is nothing new, but it's evolving. So I believe that all the folks that work in our function, their job is to bring the digital aspects to the company. So if we say we have a digital officer in the company, that means you're putting all the work and all the priority on the shoulder of that person. And that person, typically these digital officers, don't have a lot of resources, right? You're not going to go duplicate an IT organization or a marketing organization. So these folks tend to be one or two or three people sitting by themselves championing this company. I'd rather build this in the DNA of the technology function to collaborate with the marketing folks to make that happen. It's all position, and it's all about what is the leadership that we can bring. So I would rather train our folks and give them that empowerment that versus rely on just a separate icon in the company to do that. And, you know, when you create separate icons like that, sometimes you create another set of friction and other parties to deal with. So our focus is to build the digital thinking as part of the strategy that we do and develop our teams to do it. So really, at the end of the day, what are the IT folks? Their job is to drive process improvement, leverage new technology to empower the business, and digital is just one of those things that we bring to the table.
And I know that you also encourage your entire team to think a lot more about innovation, that this is something that is part of your broad team's set of responsibilities. An example that I was recently reading about was the notion of smart shelves, an initiative that your team was a part of. I'd love to also kind of in a similar vein, talk about how you think about the innovation process, how you ensure people are taking time to contemplate this new idea development with a lens towards new sources of value to the organization. And if you happen to have some examples of innovative ideas you're currently pursuing, so much the better.
I really like to think of this question as a very loaded question, so I'm going to spend a lot of time answering it. So just bear with me on that, because I can just talk about the exciting part of innovation. But if you only think about that, doesn't really solve the entire dilemma. You know, what we do for a company, we provide services all the way from infrastructure services to all the way to process management to information analytics. So the spectrum of the things that we work on ranges pretty large, from the mundane to the exciting, to the one that anytime you drive change, you get resistance. So all the way from the mundane to the highly resistive activities that we do. And I hope that kind of gives you the spectrum of things that we deal with. The challenge that we live in is we can't just continue the size of this opportunity or things that we deal with. Typically just keeps on getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and we end up with a lot of junks in our closets. And what I mean by that, we work from a non-commodity stuff to highly differentiating stuff to very commodity stuff. And the problem is a lot of IT organizations get stuck really living in the commodity space. And the problem is when you live in the commodity space, it's very hard to get better and hard to innovate. And oh, by the way, most companies don't make the tough calls and get rid of the old, but they also end up spending a lot of time on what new we bring in. So philosophically, I've told my team, and we've had this now for the last 5 years, that every year we have to take the bottom 10% of value out of what we do. And this is really, to me, the beginning of innovation, because sometimes people think in cutting costs or getting rid of the bottom 10% is really, it's ugly work, but it's really can be very energizing, because you're even automating the things that you do internally within your function. We start creating this concept of we can't just keep piling on, we need to take the old out. Think about it as the beginning of the seeds of innovation. Okay, that's concept number one. Concept number two, Peter, is like I mentioned, we work on either commodity stuff or really non-commodity stuff, but in between, there's always a gray line that moves from year to year that I call it the white commodity zone. It's a white space where stuff not quite commodity and it's white non-commodity. And the line changes from year to year. So how I manage my function to always continue to manage this line and not get stuck in it. So how do we really evolve what we work on all the time? So get rid of the old stuff, know always manage core and context all the time. And then the third piece is what we always talk about, classical innovation, which is the kind of the bleeding edge of what we do. So I think of the innovation dilemma in these three buckets in my mind. So this is how we contextually keep having the conversation with our teams. In terms of, okay, now focusing on the real innovation here, it goes back to the ecosystem of partners that we work on, right? Whether it's Intel, whether it's Microsoft, whether some of the new companies coming in, how do we always scan that and how do we deal with it and how we work with it? For example, on the smart shelf, it was a lot of external relationship. We didn't just fund that internally by ourselves. It was a lot of external relationship that helped us build it. So we really commit, and I really don't negotiate with anybody about cutting the budget of a small team that really keep on the razor edge of things, because they are the ones going to bring new thinking to my entire function. So I don't consider them just folks bringing new ideas to the marketplace, but their job is to help us stay more current, making sure that we stay in the core and not the commodity, and bring us these ideas internally to their function. So it's an incubation mechanism, not about to give us new things, but to help my organization stay current with these activities. But also the other part, the question is, what are the exciting things that I think are coming down the line that's going to make a big difference? Please. And Peter, I think the biggest one, and my view on it, just a slightly different, it's the Internet of Things. I think the Internet of Things is really going to change a lot of things that we work on. But it's not just connecting smart devices to the Internet. I mean, we can connect down the road these smart shelves. We will connect our coolers. We'll connect our vending machines or the stores that we serve. But I see really down the road this Internet of Things exploding to help us run companies better. You know the old adage that Federal Express used to say, the information about the package is more important than the package itself? For me, I even think now, take the invoice. We process probably about 10 million invoices per year. I think this is a really very complex process that comes out from the electronic system, goes to paper, then goes digitized again. I just want to give you an example where the information about the invoice is more important than the invoice itself eventually. So think about the Internet of Things of transactions within companies. So I think the Internet of Things and this connection at the transaction level is going to revolutionize how we work and how we think. I think that's the next breakthrough. So how do we prepare our companies to think like that, whether it's the infrastructure or anything that we deal with? I see that in industry, but I see that even more in other areas. Just for example, in my mind, Peter, is pharma. When somebody goes get a pill or a medicine, the information about the medicine, the information of what other medicines I'm taking, it's going to really change how people interact with technology. You know, I even had this vision maybe 15 years from now, HR systems. You know, today, my HR information is sitting in Mondelez HR system, right? my payroll information, my bank information, my family information, my insurance information, my location information, all these information is sitting in the company. Well, if I apply the Internet of Things that information about me is more important than me, then maybe in the future, whenever I switch employers, my information comes with me on a card. That's, I think, some of the technology that's going to truly change how we work. And it goes back to my initial concept that where does the company begin and where does the company end is going to quite change quite a bit with the Internet of Things.
Great overview of certainly a white hot topic these days. May I ask you, Mark, to provide some thoughts about how do organizations get there? How much does one's infrastructure need to change, one's technology footprint need to change in order to realize the kind of benefits that you're describing? How do you go from sort of the kernel of an idea, which is so compelling, to ensuring that you've got the various things interconnected and the data collected, and then ultimately the right kinds of decisions made in order to seize that opportunity?
Yeah, Peter, this is really a great question. What I really believe deep down inside is you have to figure out how to make time a friend, not an enemy. And what I mean by that, if you get your thinking and your architecture on the right trajectory, then time will become your friend. If you don't start planting the seeds now, if you don't get the foundation in place, then time will become your enemy. So to me, the biggest thing is the future is really not that hard to predict, right? I fundamentally believe that the internet is what created companies like ours, right? Without the internet, there won't be the globalization. Without the internet, there won't be how the world is shrinking the way it is. The whole flatness of the world is happening because of technology and the internet. So the internet is going to continue to grow. So fundamentally, I challenge companies and I challenge our employees. Are we building the old classical network for our company, or it's a different kind of a network, right? So that's, to me, one example of the fundamental questions you ask. You know, most companies have their own dedicated MPLS network. Well, if you really want to embrace the future, dedicated MPLS network might not be the answer. Maybe it's distributed architecture of a network where you leverage the internet as much as you can. So if you get your employees to think like that, leveraging services from the cloud, this is the other big piece. Our new sales system, for example, sits in the Amazon cloud. Employees always, I tell you, just I've learned it, Peter, quite a bit now. Anytime I introduce new idea, whether it's to my employees or my peers or the company, the bigger the idea, the more resistance I'm going to get. It's a natural reaction of humans. Every time I brought a new system in, they hated it, and they hated it when I take it out again. So when you believe in these fundamental facts, you just know that's the nature of humans and you deal with it. So we have to build these foundations, change the network, change the consuming model of compute, change the way you think about your digital infrastructure, rethink about your transaction processing, you know, push your suppliers. I mean, we have suppliers like HP, SAP, Microsoft. We push them to the hilt to help us really get to the new paradigm. And the other piece is really getting rid of the bottom 10%. You won't believe how much getting rid of the bottom 10% of value typically tend to be sitting on old legacy equipment that really hurts you in the long run.
I really like that theme. You've mentioned it a couple times now, Mark, this notion of setting yourself up, ensuring that the foundation is constantly cared for so that you're building to be sustainably strong, and ensuring that this modernization effort, which is ongoing and very much fundamental to the innovation efforts of the organization, the legacy technology is not getting in your way of being faster and able to seize opportunities more quickly. That seems like such an important, well, foundational idea that you're pursuing to make sure that you've got that ability to be nimble, that ability to tune the organization to be that much more innovative. I really like that concept.
And, you know, Peter, somebody might hear and say, well, how much did Mark invest to get to that state? And how much Mark is continuing investing to do that, right? So people a lot of time think, well, I can't do it because I don't have the money. I can't do it because I don't have the support. I tell you, we have been cutting our budgets year over year. So how did we do this? I mean, maybe we're just unique. Our company has changed a lot, right? Whether when we spun off Kraft Foods, whether we bought Cadbury. So there's always activities that happens in our company that we take advantage of it to move the agenda. So I think before you worry about money or you worry about the change in our company, I feel like having the proper vision that your employees believe in, that they sign up to and excited behind it, is to me the ground zero of the activity. That's the foundation. And then money comes and money goes. So if you had this vision and you had this belief, every penny that comes your way, you spend it the right way.
That's really great. And actually, if I can tie it back, Mark, let me know if I'm getting this right. But as I think back to the beginning of our conversation, and the augmentation of your responsibilities, your team's responsibilities, each time you're adding a layer, it requires that your original set of responsibilities, those of IT, are that much more efficient, that much more reliable, that much more effective. Because if it's lacking in any of those ways, you're not going to be doing justice as you're splitting your time between three very significant legs of the stool. And so it requires constantly reinvesting to ensure that you've got the appropriate level of efficiency and effectiveness so that you can, in fact, spread yourself across a variety of very important capabilities. Do I have that hypothesis correct?
Peter, you have it almost 100% right. But let me just add one more piece to that. If I have to sit there and worry about servers running, then I'll never have the freedom to deal with this new spaces and new horizons, right? But I have to tell you, you have to be careful, because when you start driving change in a company, most people tell you, why are you playing out of your house? Go back to your room, fix your boiler room. The boiler room is not working correctly. So sometimes people even try to convince you that, hey, maybe your house is not 100% in order. Go take care of their house, then come help me. So we have to be careful not to also people keep pushing us back in the paradigm, because what's my perfection, right? You know, I can't run our system 100%. I mean, it's not worth the investment to run them 100%. We are going to have hiccups once in a while, as long as we understand it, we get it, we react to it. So it's not quite seeking perfection. It's doing the right thing for the right investments, but at the same time, feeling comfortable with their own skin that people don't tend to push us back to our boiler room.
No, I like that a lot. And you mentioned the whole need for change management, understandably. What you're exacting on the organization is a healthy amount of change. How do you think about change management from the communications aspect, from the description of the sort of before and after and the value that will be achieved for the change that's going to be there? How do you prepare the organization for each of the new bits of change that it's going to have to digest?
Actually, Peter, that is the hardest part of what we do. Honestly, that at the end of the day, it wasn't for change, implementing technology would be cheaper, faster. You won't believe it. Literally, I mean, when you think about our projects, the beginning of the project always is about alignment. It's about convincing the, you know, five markets that they need to measure customer service the same way. You know, it's about convincing markets that what works for them will work in another market. In my view, we spend way too much money in the beginning of projects to help people change. And I believe, actually, if I had to dream up what my title would be 5 years from now, I really would think about it as the chief change officer. My job is really to increase my company's propensity for change. If I can increase my company's propensity for change, it'll be an amazing place. So that's one piece. The other piece is, this is my own belief, is I can't change people. If I can't convince people to change on the inside, everything that we'll do is just fake. So how do we really work with people to get them to believe that this is change is the right thing? So to me, once we start creating the pull versus the push, then they can come to us, we'll help them with the change. But to me, fundamental piece is, how do you create the gap so people want to sign up to the change? That to me is the hardest bit. And I think a lot of ways to do it, I believe, is bringing external examples. This is from my experience. That's why I was, you know, sharing with you that's important for us to be externally focused. What I found out for my leadership and the people I deal with internally in the company, if you bring them good benchmarking data, you bring them external perspective, show them how other companies work, especially outside of our space. You know, a lot of times we look within our CPG industry, our consumer goods, but if I bring them example from banking, bring back them from medical, bring them example from outside industries, that usually the beginning of the change. Because before you get somebody to accept the change or believe the change is important, you have to get them to question the status quo. So if we get them to question the status quo, then that is the beginning of elements to change. That's my thinking about it.
Well, Mark DeJohnny, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT and sharing some of your perspectives and the many really extraordinary practices that you've implemented at Mondelez International and made you and your team the success that it's been.
Well, thank you so much.
You You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World-Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World-Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of world-class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.